people who were there, I could actually skip the motivation, but for those who were not there, so we go very quickly on over the motivation. So the motivation is, well, of this work is to study what is the luminosity distance redshift relationship in a real inhomogeneous universe. So basically, what we do in standard cosmology is that we use the FRW model, and then we compute the luminosity distance, we compute the redshift, and then we discover that to fit the data, we need a negative pressure term. So the question here is just to what extent this is justified to use a homogeneous FRW model. So for sure, at high redshift, and we see that in the CMB, the universe looks very homogeneous on all the observed scales. So that's for sure a good approximation, but when we look at the universe today, we discover that, well, on a scale which is approximately 1% of the Hubble radius, all density fluctuations are over that one. And there are also objects like superclusters and large bodies which can extend up to a few hundred of megaparsecs, and this is roughly 10% of the Hubble radius. So the universe looks more like a network with a sponge-like structure. You have these two-dimensional pancakes and they surround voids. So the typical length of this structure is about 100 to 150 megaparsecs of a page. So here we have a picture of recent SPSS data. So as you see, for example, well, one structure, the biggest structure which is there in the data is this this thing here, which is called the Sloan Great Wall. It's about 400 megaparsec length. Yeah, so here we have another image of that. This one. This is another wall. Anyway, so what we want to do here is to consider inhomogeneous models. So we look at zero pressure, so only dust. And as I said, there are basically two motivations. The first one is to which extent this can work to mimic acceleration. Well, this is very controversial and unclear, so we'll see what we can say about that. And another question is, in any case, if you can quantify deviation from FRW, that's definitely useful. So it's kind of a difficult question, but it's very well defined, so one should be able to say something. So I would argue that there are basically three physical effects which are important. The first one is back reaction. Well, Rocky has explained that very well in his talk, and the point is that perturbation affects the background. The ground is nonlinear, so that's clear. The second effect is that what we actually observe is not the scale factor, but we observe light. So light goes through voids and structures, and so it gets corrections, and how to which extent these corrections are negligible. And the third effect is actually what happens if we happen to live in a large region which is very different from the rest. So if the cosmological principle, if you want, it doesn't really hold. Or if we live in a large, especially we look at a large underdense region. So, so as I said, there are three effects. I will spend just a few words on the back reaction, on what has been done in the literature. So one approach one can take is to look at commoving synchronous gauge. In that gauge, one fixes a domain that I call D and averages the energy density over that domain. And then one writes down this equation. If you want, this is a definition of AD, the scale factor for that domain. Now, it can be shown that AD does not evolve as in FRW. This has been done first by Booker, 97 already. And basically for two reasons. Gravity first is nonlinear. And second is because if the domain is small, there are local effects that can affect this expansion. Then it has been shown also that this scale factor AD can also accelerate in principle. even if locally it decelerates, even if at any local point it decelerates. But the real question is how large is this effect in the real universe? And this is very controversial and unclear. The first calculation which I'm aware is by Hui and Sanchez, and they found out that the effect is 10 to minus 5 at second order in perturbation theory, and we have also confirmed the same result. The point is that, for example, Rassan in 2004 has suggested that maybe if you go at higher order, you will get larger effect. And so we have also shown, and also Rocky has shown with Matarese and Rioff, that higher order correction, they become all basically order 10 to minus 5 at low redshift. So that's what makes the issue not clear, because if they resound to something small, then you know the effect is 10 to minus 5, but there is still an open possibility that maybe they could resound to something not trivial and not negligible. Okay, so I'm not saying that. We don't spend more time on this topic. I will just say that if there is any sizable effect, it's going to be non-linear. And so by perturbation theory, we cannot capture this effect. And moreover, it's not completely clear how we can connect this quantity AD to observable quantities. So that's why we thought that it would be useful to study this problem from a different approach, which is through an exact model, and I will show what are our results. But before going to that, so I will go very briefly about the issue of propagation of light. That's a very simple concept. When you have a single photon, for example, this is redshifted differently if you are in empty space or you are close to a structure. So you get correction to the redshift. And the same thing if you have a cone of light that will be focused close to structures and defocused far from them. That's what's called usually lensing. So the question is, do these effects compensate and they give just the usual FRW result or not? Third, as I said, there is this issue of local large fluctuation. Now, this is more of a speculation, but suppose that we live in a peculiar local region, for example, a local void. Then what happens is that the low redshift observation will be very different from the average universe. And so one thing which is important to have in mind is that acceleration is always inferred comparing low redshift with high redshift. So if the low redshift observations are affected by this large fluctuation, maybe this can mimic acceleration. And this has been proposed in the context of the Metra-Tolman Bondi model, TB models, by many authors. The first one, I think it was Tomita. The question that we try to answer in this, that we have tried to answer in this work is, how much contrast delta rho over rho, and how large local void you need if you want to have a successful model without dark energy. So what is the minimal size of this density of this local region? Okay, so we try to answer all these questions in the context of an LTB model, which is exactly solvable. So the first model that we have explored is called the onion model, and the reason is very simple, it looks like an onion. So it's a model with concentric shells of different density. So just very quickly, brief review of the LTB matrix. So LTB matrix looks quite similar to FRW matrix, except that this function R, usually here you have a scale factor. This function R depends also on the radial coordinate. And here you have R prime. But the Einstein equation of this, so if you write down the Einstein equation for this metric, they look very similar to Friedman equation. There are some free functions, but turns out there are three three functions. It turns out that we have to play just with one of them. So this is a solution for the DB metric, and it looks exactly like FRW. So if you have, I didn't say that you have also this curvature here. The curvature depends on the radius. But for positive curvature, you get cosine, solution, and sine. For negative curvature, you get hyperbolic cosine and sine, same as in FRW. And for zero curvature, you get the t scale factor. This r, basically the scale factor, goes like t to the 2/3. So you have to think about this model as like if you had one FRW for each value of the coordinate of the radial coordinate, so this an infinite set of FRW universes. Okay, so now there is one of these three functions which is in the metric is just a gauge choice. So it's just a gauge. You have the freedom of putting this function to be something standard, so it doesn't have any physical meaning. So there is just, I will not show that, but it is just one function which is useful, because the idea that we have is that we also want to describe structure formation in this model. So we want to have a profile that looks homogeneous on average, and at early times it has tiny density fluctuation, and then we want that this density fluctuation grow and becomes nonlinear today. So exactly what happens in our universe. Now, as a warning, in some of these papers, some of the LTB papers, they make use of decay mode. So what happens is exactly the opposite. So we have to play with this function, which is the curvature function. If you put that function to zero, you get flat FRW. If you put it to plus minus one, you get open or closed universe. But if you use something non-trivial like this, this is what we are using, then you get a non-trivial profile on the radial coordinate. And this is exactly what works if you want to describe a periodic onion. So there are basically two parameters. One is the wavelength of this density distribution, and the other one is the amplitude of this density distribution. So we can actually solve semi-analytically for the density in this model. And it turns out that you can describe the contrast delta rho over rho in this form, epsilon divided by 1 plus epsilon, and where epsilon is proportional to the density, to delta rho over rho, it's proportional to a sine, and grows like t to the 2/3. So for a very small epsilon, which means at early times, this looks exactly like the usual result from perturbation theory. Delta grows like the scale factor. And for epsilon large, this thing starts growing rapidly, and this is exactly what happens also in the so-called Zeldovich approximation. So we know that we are in the right track. There is one problem with this model is that at some point you will hit the singularity. At some point the delta rho over rho will go to infinity, and that's just because your shells of high density, they will become denser and denser. At some point the density becomes infinite. So what we have to do is that we have to work before that this happens. That's the way of avoiding problems. In the real world, of course, it's different because the motion is not only radial, but it's also circular, so you can also have viralization of structures. But in this model, there's nothing that prevents the structure to become infinitely thin and dense. So that's how the density profile looks like. So at recombination, for example, here, that delta over rho is of order 10 to minus 4, and it's just sinusoidal in the radial coordinate. Then at different times, this thing grows. And today, you can get delta over rho of order 1. And as you see, the structure is that you get large under dense region and small and thin over densities. So So once you have the metric and the density profile, you can study the propagation of a photon in this metric. So what you have to study is the redshift and the luminosity distance. So the redshift, you have just solved a very simple differential equation. I will not go into details, but you can actually solve it semi-analytically also. And you can show that the redshift, for example, at small redshift, it gets a correction which is proportional to the wavelength divided by the the distance in the coordinate distance between the source and the observer. And it is also proportional, it is also linear in the density contrast. So it is quite easy to recognize that, well, quite easy. One can recognize that this is just a peculiar velocity correction. So you, basically, in this model, you have radial motions, which are correlated, of course. And so when you look at the source in this model, the source is just moving with respect to the observer, so you have a Doppler effect. So that's why the curve redshift as a function of the radial coordinate gets this oscillating correction. And the same thing happens for the luminosity distance. I don't have time to go into the details of the calculation. So here, at this point, we can answer, is there any back reaction effect in this model? Do we see an overall deviation or not? Well, the answer is no. Actually, so if you look at, so this is the final graph. Here you have redshift, and here you have magnitude. For those who are not familiar with magnitudes, it's just a log of the luminosity distance. And this is what usually astronomers use plot. And so as you see, you have oscillations of the, so the blue curve is our model, and this just oscillates around the cold dark matter model. So you have no overall effect. Well, as you see, the lambda CDM is very different from the temperature. So, so that's the first statement that we have. There is no overall back reaction. So is that because of this specific profile? That's another, also another question one can ask. Is that because of the fact that we are actually playing with a small curvature? Okay. So in some sense, we are doing some approximation. So that's.
What's the period of the
submission? Well, it depends on what you choose as the density profile. Well, here we choose, I think here we chose 50 megaparsecs here.
And
just an
example. It doesn't change, I mean, it doesn't change the
conclusion. No, you get just different oscillations, so it's a larger degree. Yeah. So, so what we have done as a second way to investigate this problem is to use instead a Swiss cheese model. So Swiss cheese, as you can imagine, so what you do is that you carve a spherical patch from FRW and you replace it with FTB. So you have to match it properly. So there are some conditions of this curvature function. Again, I will not go into detail. But what is useful about this model is that it allows to study also profiles with nonlinear curvature, k. Well, in the other model, k was always small, so one should wonder if there is an effect here or not. So what we do is that we put the observer and the source just outside this hole, and we look at if there is any net effect or not. And actually, what we find is that no, there is no net effect again. And in fact, we can also make contact with perturbation theory, and you can show that the gravitational potential is small, and the only integrated effect that you have is suppressed as L over your horizon size cube, and this is the usual Riesz-Sham effect. So there is basically nothing new that comes out from this picture, and there is also no back reaction on the outside FRW. And that's because, by construction, there is a spherical symmetry that prevents any effect on the outside region. So the only possibility, which I think is left, is maybe to go to non-spherical models. But anyway, for this question, I think we have a negative answer, if I to say what is our idea. So here I will go instead to a second part of the talk. I guess I have only 5 minutes. I will try to show some things. So there is, as I said, there is a peculiar velocity effect. So there is a Doppler effect. And the basic picture is that all the sources are just attracted towards dense shells. So if you live inside the void, there is a collective radial velocity that adds to the expansion, to the overall expansion of the universe. And that's how people have studied LTB models, and they have shown that this can mimic acceleration. And the point is that, one has to be careful because there is even a theorem, any Hubble diagram can be fit by an LTB model. So the whole point is that, is that a realistic and testable model? I mean, if you assume a generic radial density profile, you can fit any Hubble diagram. So our philosophy was to try as much as possible to make contact with a realistic cosmology. And what is the smallest wavelength and the smallest delta rho over rho that can possibly work? Also, but I will not have time to discuss this, so what is the typical systematic correction to supernovae? So here I'm at this last part of the talk. So I will skip all the details. And I will just show you the graphs. So if we are assuming this contrast, delta rho over rho, basically we live in a region which has delta rho over rho minus 0.2. And this region extends up to redshift 0.07. So if this happens, and if here you can have this large overdensity instead, then then what you get in as a final curve to fit the supernova is this kind of curve. So the curve goes up very quickly and then it goes down parallel to product matter. And the reason why this is not a totally bad fit is that here in this region there are not many data. in fact, if you do a chi-square analysis of the supernovae, well, you find that's the lambda CDM result, 178, and that's the result that you get in this kind of models for this number. I can skip. Okay, so I will make an assessment of this scenario. So what it requires, at least what I think it's a minimal requirement, is that you require delta rho over rho, which is quite large, 0.3 on a scale of 400 megapascal diameter. So the expected value instead of delta rho over rho on that scale is about one order of magnitude less. So if you could have a fluctuation on that scale, which is 10 times larger than what you expect, then you could actually give a reasonable fit of the supernova data. Another problem is that the observer has to sit, yeah.
But what you expect, is that just...
From a usual structure formation scenario. From the usual, you take the power spectrum, you compute the fluctuation on that scale, and you expect 10 times smaller than that. Another point is that the observer has to sit near the center if you want to avoid the large anisotropies in the Hubble constant measurement. Then we didn't study the CMB spectrum, the full CMB spectrum, but actually this thing can fit the first peak of the CMB spectrum. And the reason is that outside the bubble you have a lower Hubble constant. That's how you can fit the first peak. I want to show, before concluding also, there is a surprising coincidence that I found this paper by Inoue and Silk just last year, and they tried to explain the alignment in the low multiples of the CMB and also the non-Gaussian cold spot which is present in CMB. And what they need is that they need two voids on the same scale or the same delta rho over rho. And that would explain low multiple anomalies. And then if you have also a third void, you can also explain this cold spot. Anyway, that's quite intriguing. In fact, what happens is that this effect, which is cubic, it's an integrated effect, it gives exactly a 10 to minus 5 effect on the CMB. So with this kind of structures, you will get an effect, a large effect on the supernova and on the CMB. And that's kind of pictures that you get if you have two of these voids. If you have two of these voids, you can, this is the real data of the quadruple and optical, and this is what you get, these two voids. Okay, so I guess the real question is how unlikely is the existence of such voids? Can one imagine that there is a nonlinear percolation of small voids, and this is what you know Sirk tried to say in their paper? Does it require non-standard structure formation, or maybe non-standard primordial features in the spectrum? Other issues that is that I'm not sure. Well, I'm not an expert at all on this, but I found papers that say that simulation kind of not agree exactly with real data. There is this paper in 2006 by Ignaz. He says the fraction of superclusters in real data is five times larger than simulations. Then there is another claim here that there is a 25% local underdensity in the southern galactic cap on a scale of 150 megaparsecs. So that's basically the picture that one has to have in mind. So this is I was trying to do a circle by hand, but that's okay because we don't need a perfect circle. So, but what you need is that a region of this roughly this size of and 20% under density. Quite intriguing that there is this large structure here. okay, so maybe the observer can hopefully answer to this question, maybe already with present data. I don't know. Also, we have a sharp transition in the Hubbard diagram, as you saw before. This sharp transition here, and as I said, there is not much data in this region, but there is this experiment, SDSS2, and they are basically almost done with the experiment, and they will have they will have 40 supernovae here, so that will immediately rule out the model if they don't find any bump. Okay, so, and finally, let me say also that if you want to avoid anisotropies and or a large dipole in the CMB, you need to be close to the center and with a precision of about 10 megaparsecs. So 10% precision. Okay, so finally, let me just give you this number. Instead, if I use what is a typical number, delta rho over rho, so look at the bottom of the plot. On that scale, which is 0.02, this number is wrong. So I get the correction in magnitudes typical of 0.05. So that's definitely something that one has to take into account when looks at observations. So that's the expected number that you get. So yeah. I can just go through the conclusions just very quickly. So we have constructed the nonlinear examples of structure formation in the context of a nonion model and Swiss cheese model and computer-like propagation model. Then we didn't find any integrated effect or back reaction effect. And maybe this is due to spherical symmetry. So the question is, maybe if one can go beyond spherical symmetry, if one can find something not trivial or not. Then we have shown that if you have a large local fluctuation, you can roughly mimic acceleration. What you need is a radius of 200 megaparsec and delta rho over 0.3, basically. And in any case, we have found a typical systematic shift in the supernova data, and that's of order 0.05 magnitude. And also a similar anisotropy, if you could measure that. Yeah, that's all.
I have a question on something you said towards the beginning. So you were talking about spatially averaged quantities and how,
yeah,
if you look at a perturbative expansion of those, the terms are roughly the same size.
Yes.
So isn't spatial averaging inherently a gauge-dependent thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So couldn't it be true that in a different gauge you might not have that problem, the turns might get smaller? Like if you use the Newtonian gauge?
It could be.
So it's not, okay.
It could be. That's the question.
I think so.
Could be, yeah.
Yeah,
I don't
okay.
say no, I don't know.
Yeah, but just have a comment. There's a difference between second order in potential or metric and second order in density. So that calculation that we have done is second order in metric. The metric regressions, so it only seems the metric regressions are small. And we think
yeah.
they are, even in the nonlinear regime, right?
Yeah.
Whereas the what goes into, when you plug the numbers in, you plug them from the fully nonlinear evolved equations. So in that sense, it is fully nonlinear. So you use n-body simulations.
Yeah, my comment would be that, well, first there is this issue of the gauge. If you go into synchronous gauge, then the calculation is different. And second, one should also study what happens even higher order. You can study second order, but if fourth order is of the same order as the second order.
But it's not, right?
Because
metric regression is n minus 5, so there you have a very well defined
right.
expansion.
Right, so that's gauge, yes, in the synchronous gauge, no. So I guess.
But wait, as I said the other day, we don't do n-body simulation synchronous gauge. There's a good reason for that, right?
Yeah.
It breaks down.
Yeah, in the synchronous gauge, even if the. I mean, you get metric perturbations that can be of order 1 or larger just because of the gauge transformation. You may get all these extra. Radiance appearing in front of your potentials.
Yeah, I would say the whole point is that, the metric is small, but the delta rho over rho is large. So one could wonder if at higher orders, terms in delta rho over rho could compensate to this approach in the metric. That's
but
my.
I think if you do the calculation in, like in standard Newtonian gauge or something, you'll see that the terms get smaller. But that's, again, in a perturbative. Calculation,
right? Right,
yeah. That's perturbative, yeah.
I mean, from perturbative arguments, I would say that in that case, it seems unlikely that you have an effect, but it's, well, unless you do it with an exact calculation, you can never be 100% sure.
Right, because delta gets to be larger than 1, so you.
Right.
Okay, we're ready to go. Let's see you guys again.